What's up, everybody? Welcome to Value Town. Episode 73. I'm Chanman V, and we've got an arena episode planned for today, as you can tell with the guests I have here. But I want to welcome Crip to the show. What's up, Crip? It's been a while.
What's up?
How you guys? Been? What's up, guys?
Are we not welcoming the other two guys?
I'm going one at a time, dude. I'm going clockwise, dude. All right, Ratsma, what's up, buddy? Welcome.
Hey, what's up, guys?
All right, cool. And Dwokta, of course.
Hey, how's it going?
This is like the original three we were supposed to have like last time. I think we did the show, but you know, Ratsma kind of left us left us a little hanging. What happened that time?
Was that really my fault? I don't remember what happened.
I
got uninvited.
No, we didn't get uninvited. Whatever. Anyways, so this is the arena episode that we were, you know, intending for a while. But lots going on in arena, as you could tell with just Crip just being all over Reddit. Well, I mean, Crip's always on Reddit, but Crip's streak was all over Reddit this last day or two.
Yep.
Streaking with the 12 wins. It was 8 in a row, right?
No, it wasn't 8 in a row. It was 5 in a row, and then I tanked a run with a quad evolve shaman, and then I got 3 in a row. So it was
quad evolve.
101 wins in 9 arenas, which is pretty good.
Yeah,
and I did it just for the show. I just wanted to bring in some more viewers for you today. So,
thanks, man. I appreciate that. No, that's crazy. Quad evolve, man. Okay, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think that deck would have actually been okay if I had like weapons and removal, but I didn't. So it was like play a bunch of stuff, hope it stays alive, then evolve it.
Yeah,
which doesn't work all that well with shaman, as you'd probably guess.
Right. Well, guys, what we got planned today is going to do the class rankings. This is kind of just a general, more of a look or a synopsis of the current meta in Arena and just, some of the things. Not quite as in-depth as, you know, like Dwokta's, talk show that he does, but we're definitely want to get just a general thing for the Value Town audience. So we're going to do class rankings. We're going to talk about what these guys' top 5 cards are for just all the new cards from Whispers of the Old Gods. And then we're going to have a discussion about Arena events and, like, where are Arena events? Because we still have this big game mode that I feel like still doesn't get any love from at least the standpoint of events. And then we'll do some viewer Q&A at the end. You guys tweet your questions to just tweet them to me at ChanManV. And if we don't get any there, then we'll take a look at Twitch chat at least just to get some in at the very end. Okay, so I guess Arena. Let's talk about just the general meta. I guess what are your thoughts just on the meta right now? We don't have to go in quite defining the meta yet, but how are you feeling about it right now? Edward, what's up with you?
About the meta, it is slow, it is value-based. I can't say I like it, but it's definitely very skill-based. I think this is the meta that the better you are, because there's more turns, there's more stuff going on the board, and if your fundamental skills aren't up to par, it's going to really hurt you. And if you aren't kind of figuring out exactly how greedy you can be on each turn, then that's going to hurt you too. In terms of how fun it is to play, it's a little slow. I don't know. I thought it was going to be very exciting, and it was for like the first week. And now we're at the point where I'm kind of getting bogged down into the arena meta, and it feels like it's a lot on the board, so it's a lot of work, and you have to do a lot of math. And I'm always against doing math, so that's where I think the arena meta is right now. Too much math.
Too much math. Okay, all right. Ratsma, how about you?
Yeah, I mean, the meta did slow down a lot. It's changed from like past, like GVG introduced like the first like very proactive meta, where people started playing, you know, they wanted to control the board starting on turn 2 or 3 very early. And then TGT kind of just made that more powerful by adding a lot of cards that kind of work well with controlling the board and being ahead early. But this is the closest meta we have to what used to be, which is, you know, back in Classic, used to be very value-oriented and very slow-paced, card-for-card type thing. It's, it's definitely a huge change in the meta.
All right, Crip?
I actually don't agree with that at all.
All right, here we go.
Here we go.
Like all my successful decks, are just like 1 drops, 2 drops, 3 drops, and card draw. Maybe we just haven't advanced as a whole, but it feels like one drops and three drops and play rogue means wrecking all the slow players. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like when I'm playing a slow deck, I get run over by every warlock, and I get run over by every rogue. Because like the warlocks are much more zoo-like. Like warlocks in arena much more resemble zoolocks in ranked now, like more than ever. So like it's really hard to beat them in the early game, and if you don't, it's impossible to win because they just draw two cards and you draw one. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I tried drafting slow and it didn't work out that well. So I draft actually more aggressively than before, and that's been working out a little bit better.
But even for your mage's grip,
I feel like every card needs to be either ridiculous in the early game or allow you to come back in the late game. And there's like very few cards that you should choose intentionally that don't do one of those two things.
I think like fast relative to how like you used to draft, because I know how like expensive your decks usually are or they used to be.
Okay.
I think fast means like, you know, kind of where we're at. I'm not quite sure, but surprising that you think that the meta, I feel like maybe you're just doing better because you're playing faster decks, and that was always stronger even before.
Yeah, I think we said this. This is something that I pushed about three weeks ago, which is there's three ways to succeed in this meta. And the normal easy way, which is where I would say more than half of your drafts are going to naturally tend towards, is to try to outvalue your opponent. And if you're a better player, you'll win. If you're not, you won't. But that's a value game. You're going to fail at that in terms of drafting half the time because that's how it works, right? You're going to get a subpar deck half the time. And in those half of the times, what you want to do is the more successful archetypes, like you were talking about, Crip, is aggro control and snowball, where you were talking about the rogue aggro control, right? You put down some one drops, some two drops, you get some removals, you hit the face, and the game ends, or you have enough reach to end the game at some point. It's very effective, but there's only a few classes that can pull it off. And I think even in those classes, like for rogue, if I'm trying to draft aggro control, I'll succeed maybe, I don't know, definitely less than half the time, maybe like 40%, a third of the time. And that's the class best suited for that kind of playstyle. And a paladin or a shaman with snowball, it's kind of a similar thing, I think.
Oh, I think warrior is the same too. I think all the weapon classes kind of have this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree about warrior.
Okay, well, why don't we continue the discussion, but let's kind of frame it around just the class rankings, because one of the things I did before the show, guys, is I had each of these guys tell me their power rankings for the classes and have them divided up into different tiers, too, so just where the drop-offs are. So why don't we compare that? So let me bring that up real quick. And, okay, so some of the folks obviously listen to the show via audio, so I'll kind of read them out real quick. So Kriparians is starting from the best class to the worst class. Rogue, Mage, Paladin is Tier 1. Tier 2 is Warlock, Shaman, Warrior, Druid as Tier 2, and Hunter, Priest as the bottom tier. Edwakta, Tier 1, Mage, Rogue. He actually has four tiers, so we'll try to figure something out here. Everybody just got to tell me different things.
I might put Druid in Tier 3.
Really?
I haven't seen a single good Druid deck.
Wow, okay.
Not even one.
Okay, so Edwakta Tier 2, Paladin, Shaman, Tier 3, Druid, Warlock, Warrior, Hunter, Priest in the bottom tier. Okay, Ratsma, Tier 1, Mage, Warlock, Rogue, second tier, Druid, Shaman, Warrior, Paladin, and then Tier 3, Hunter, Priest. So everybody agrees on Hunter, Priest being just the worst, and so in that order, too.
I put my tiers in alphabetical order. So within it, that's not necessarily my ranking.
What? I told you to rank them, dude. I mean, what is
this? I put them in tiers. Okay. So I have an extra tier. Okay. Does that make up for it?
That's true. Okay, so let's talk about it. So Druid. I guess the first thing to talk about is Druid, because I think there was a pretty big difference. Just having a 2-slot or a 3-slot difference is a big deal, just because we only have 9 classes, right? So Ratsma, you actually have Druid at 4, and Crip actually has Druid.
Yeah, but looking at this, it kind of looks like everyone just makes it as like puts it towards like the middle of the classes.
I would put it at the bottom, actually.
It's kind of preference. You want to make it tier 3.
I think it's tier. It's just like a firm experience. I haven't played that many runs. I've played like, I don't know, maybe 40, maybe 50 runs in the expansion. I've never like found a Druid deck that just kicked my ass, except for like, you know, 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drop, 4-drop, and the fact that it was Druid made no difference.
Right.
So it felt like the traditional druid decks just outpaced them, which makes sense. Like, I'm drafting faster decks. Druids are drafting more late game cards, apparently. And they're just getting steamrolled. And druids don't have the tools to come back on the board. So I've just seen nothing good. I think I only had one druid run. I went like 8 or 9 wins. But that was also my only run on the first week. And I heard the first week was a complete joke. So
I mean, that doesn't really count for much. Druids are just inherently more tanky. Like, their hero power gives them a health and that utility PM. Mm-hmm. And also you get a lot of big taunts. I mean, that's what druids are really good at, stabilizing and also just card advantage. Well, no, historically, I've always had like druid as one of my best classes. So
here's how I play the decks that kind of work really well. You have 1-drop, 2-drop, 3-drops, and 4-drops. Mostly 1s and 3s. I feel like 1s and 3s are like the big ones. Yeah, I don't pick druid very much, so I'm going to mention that. But I've also played against a bunch of druid, and I'm not even sure I lost to more than one druid since the expansion came out. Like, that's kind of my point.
Wow.
My point is, like, you crush them in the early game, and the first big thing that they play, like, if they play their first 7-mana taunt, if you have an answer for that, they lose the game on the spot. Like, if you have a removal effect, mm-hmm. a silence, or, like, a sap, they instantly lose, because they go all in on their first big taunt minion when they're behind. Mm-hmm. And it's just so easy to beat that.
Yeah, so one of the things that's been happening with the druid, and this is what really hurts them, is that the whole meta kind of went where the druid spot was. So now if you're going to get a deck that does well in general, you're going to have a deck that's going to do well against your traditional druid deck. And so that's really bad for druid drafting a traditional druid deck. By the time you get to 8-9 wins, every deck is there to beat you, because that's how they got there, by beating decks, a lot of decks similar to what mm-hmm. your deck probably is looking like. So it does definitely hurt druid. I mean, in OE, I definitely had druid ranked a tier higher.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't gauge a class's strength by like how players that you play against play. I honestly think druid has a lot of room for players to get better at, and I still think it's like one of the better classes. And I was really close to actually putting it in tier one. But,
wow!
You know, I don't disagree with your tier one on Warlock. I've seen some insane Warlock decks, so I can see that.
Yeah, yours is actually was pretty close. So Edwakta, yours is in tier three Warlock. Is it top tier three or the bottom tier three for Warlock?
It's so I'm in a weird position with the tier three, because Warrior always seems really good to me, but it doesn't quite get there for a lot of other people, and so I have a difficult time rating Warrior. And Warlock is by far, in terms of what I see as an opponent, I get most scared of Warlocks out of anybody below a... I'm probably more scared of Warlocks than Shaman. Just because if a Warlock deck gets to a certain point, you know what's in there. You know that they're going to curve out. You know they're going to snowball onto the board. And you better have something to deal with that. And if you don't, you're just going to lose. And being one of the... Like, I was talking about the three successful ways to play in this meta... the aggro control and the snowball styles are rarely seen, because it's just harder to draft those decks and they're class dependent. So you just see them less often, which means you can get a deck that goes like 7-8 wins doing perfectly fine without seeing a really good like snowball deck. And so your deck may really not be well equipped to handle it, or you saw one and you lost to it, right? And this will be your second or third loss. And so it's very scary. I'm a little surprised Warlock, Ratsma has Warlock at number two, but it definitely got a lot stronger in this meta.
It's just Warlock doesn't really need like synergy, you know. There's high synergy classes like, you know, Hunter obviously, and Warrior, very high synergy classes, which are the reasons why they're like top tier in constructed play but not so good in Arena. Mm-hmm. But the thing about like Warlock is, because you just play a lot of cards and you're playing a lot of cheap cards and it doesn't hurt you because you're hero power, you get a lot of synergy with neutral cards as Warlock, and I think that's what generally makes any class in Arena strong, is just ability to make neutral cards good.
The last Warlock deck that I had won 12 wins, and it was just a bunch of like cards.
That's usually how it's just a bunch of singleton cards.
Yeah.
No, like you look at the deck and you're like, why did it win? About really well? Not really. It was kind of a normal curve. Did it have good big cards? Not really. Everything's kind of just average. Not a lot of class cards, and it felt okay. It played okay. So I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating Warlock.
The main issue with Warlock is when you get like a bad deck, you just can't win.
That's the
flip side of that, because like you're playing all these cards and you're playing them at a higher rate than most people can, but if the cards are like so poor quality, you're just like killing yourself playing worse stuff than your opponent. So that's why it's still like pretty balanced, I feel.
Yeah, so got to get that early.
Like, the bad decks are really trash for Warlock.
I think that brings up a good point. Like, in this meta currently, I feel like this is the most, like, card quality influence meta. Like, your results will vary, like, so much depending on the quality of cards you have. And it's so much worse than before. Back in Classic, if you had, like, I don't know, like, one Flame Strike, two Flame Strikes, or, you know, if you just had, like, a Sunwalker or Azure Drake, usually just one games card advantage. But it's actually come right back to that point back in Classic where, you know, you got a couple of good cards in your deck, it's going to carry you pretty far.
Azure Drakes were so unfair in Classic.
Sunwalker was still better, man. I've been a Sunwalker fan for so long.
Yeah.
All right, so with Warlock, you know, Ratsman, you had it really high. And but with Paladin, I think we kind of have a flip here where you have Paladin pretty low, and these two guys have it fairly high. Krip actually had it in Tier 1, and it walked in Tier 2. So why do you think Paladin's so bad, Ratsman?
You know, I'm just trying to be controversial.
That's right.
And that's cool. I mean, cool. The thing is, I think I played like one Paladin run post Old Gods. I just don't ever play Paladin. I just don't think it's fun. I don't really care for like how strong or like weak a class is. I'll just play it if it's like interesting. Paladin is just, the play is too linear. And usually Paladin is one of those classes where on turn four, depending on like what kind of big play you have, and if you have more, the better, right? You have you know, options to play, you know, a different big play. It's just not fun. And I can't really say how powerful it is because I don't play it, but I haven't been seeing that many Paladins recently. And I just don't feel like it's that strong anymore.
Well, do you lose to it much? I mean, maybe you don't play it, but you can kind of feel the power versus
I don't see other people playing it, and I don't really
I don't see other people playing it either.
I kind of see it quite a bit. I do see quite a bit, but I do agree that we don't really lose to Paladin that much, because I think Paladin is kind of like that class where you have to make a lot of good decisions to win. But I mean, some of my most unstoppable decks, like almost all the losses are Paladins, just because like some of the cards are so insane. Like I have the most insane opener ever, but then he has Muster for Battle, so I lose. So, it's a lot of those, and I can't say that it's weak. I can't even say that it's really mediocre on some of these. Like I know Paladin versus Rogue is one of the most one-sided matchups from what I've seen. And like I think out of my like outstanding run when like four of those were Rogue, two went 12-0 and two went 12-2. I think all four of those losses were Paladins. And it seems to be a bit too coincidental. Like, Paladin is just really good at stopping early game.
It's just a bad class, man. I'm so sick of losing to, like... it doesn't happen that much anymore, but I'm so sick of losing to, like, Shield the Minion to Muster. It's, like, the worst way to lose.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. It's not that Paladin's bad. I feel like all the classes are so strong right now. Like, any class can do well. And it was hard to gauge the middle classes, especially. Just because I think, you know, Warrior's pretty good right now. Druid's pretty good right now. Shaman's pretty good. Every class is really good right now. They're just very difficult.
Except the two at the bottom there. Yeah.
Very consistent there.
But, I think Hunter might be in a worse spot than Priest just because Hunter is, like, not great against, like, anything. But, like, Priest is spectacular against Mage.
Yes.
And there's a lot of Mages. So you can just make whatever Priest deck and play nonstop Mages and get, like, high win.
I'm surprised you think that. I disagree. I think Mage is really strong against Priest. I think any class with removal cards that you pick heavily, especially like in Mage or Rogue, you tend to pick a lot of removals. And whenever you like clear a Priest board, it's a pretty big gamble whether that Priest can get back on board to use their buffs and whatnot and their hero power.
Well, it's true, clearing the board is so hard.
Yeah, like if you clear the board as the Mage, you're not... Words. You just kind of use your mana, you use your cards, you clear the board. The priest will just drop more stuff, as long as the priest still has stuff. And the priest's hero power hard counters the mage's hero power.
I feel like you just need a flame cannon, the dark cultist, and then you win. I don't know.
That is pretty good. That's a pretty good combination of cards. That's for sure.
Oh. Yeah.
No, I mean, I think priest is above hunter in that thing. Mostly because if you taunt, right, this is the taunt meta. If we were to take a I guess, a description of the meta and put it down to one word. It's a taunt meta. Mm-hmm. And if your opponent plays a taunt, that means you get the initiative to react to it without needing cards that actually have initiative. Priest has a problem where none of their cards really, or very few of their cards compared to other classes, really have initiative. They're kind of reactive. They're in this on the board, which is the worst kind of being reactive. But if now in a taunt meta, your opponents are just laying stuff down and kind of underpowered stuff too compared to the other really good cards, well, now that gives you a chance to do the buffs. It gives you a, more of a chance to get on the board. And if the game is going to drag out to 20-something turns anyway, you just get more and more of these chances. And we all know as Priest, if you get on the board and you can really stabilize there, you've got it, right? You have the best card advantage edge in the game, except maybe Warlock, questionable.
Yeah, you've been playing a ton of Priest recently, right? And Wakta, that's what you're telling me, just because of this discussion you've been having with Merbs about what
Merbs is all about. Oh, Hunter is significant. Priest in this match. So disagree. Jeez. So I haven't played Priest. It's been going well. It's not like I'm racking up the 12 wins of Priest, but you know, you get 8, 9, 10 wins, and that's usually a pretty rare occurrence for Priest historically. So within this meta, considering they got okay-ish to poor cards, it's going okay. As opposed to Hunter, which has that like druid problem, I think.
Any cool discoveries you've made? Just having played it so much.
I get on the board so often by doing nothing. Like my opponent just misses drops, or does something stupid, or plays a taunt rather than try to remove my minion, even though they have something in their hand. And then I power with tentacles or power with shield or Valence, and nice. It's like over.
Yeah, the big thing is that we talk about, you know, you just use removal and these guys lose, but it's harder to get removal than it was before. Mm-hmm. And while most decks have some minions that are threatening, that have like, you know, 3 cards over 6 or 4 cards over 6, and you just need to remove those. For Priest, it's very different because, like you said, you use Power Word Tentacles in a 3-drop, and you need a Polymorph for that. Like, give me a break, right? So I can kind of see where you're coming from with that. I do want to add that I've found Priest infuriating to play because it's mostly a gamble based on your opponent's answers.
Yes.
So while I think there's some redeeming qualities now, perhaps, that still not too eager to play Priest.
I agree. When I was playing Priest, I wasn't really fun so much as I was needing to test my theories.
Nice.
I mean, with like Hunter and Priest being at the bottom, I think it goes along with, you know, proactive decks being a lot weaker now. And we talked about how like people play more reactively. Like Hunter and Priest, you need to be on the board and you need to be able to use that Priest hero power, or you need to be on the board early as Hunter to get that base damage in to close out a game. But if the meta has become so reactive, you know, you got your like mage, rogue, best reactive classes in the game, and then even like Paladin is a pretty flexible class, can play both ways. Mm-hmm. It's just the fact that, you know, Hunter and Priest, you cannot rely on getting on the board early and riding that tempo all the way to the end anymore.
Okay. Okay. So, what would you say is the most improved class, just based on the expansion?
Shaman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's what generally the consensus is. Just kind of want to see what everybody else thought. I mean, just if you guys thought the same thing.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, I moved Shaman.
I think
up.
Warlock improved by about as much as Shaman did. Yeah. I don't disagree with Shaman, but I think Warlock is almost the same. I feel like there's so many Warlock decks I'm playing against, and they all seem so good. So I think the consistency that Warlock brings now is quite high.
I think even like since like TGT, Warlock has been like top tier. Like with the addition of like Fearsome Doomguard and just more demons, it just, you know, you auto pick every demon color. What do you call it? Void color. And it's just a powerful class. Like that hero power, you can make so many different kinds of decks with that hero power. But yeah, Shaman definitely. Maybe Warrior a little bit.
I feel like Shaman still struggles from the same issues that it did before, where if you just have nothing, then you're screwed. I mean, the playstyle doesn't seem any different. It's just a few of the new cards kind of make it so the opponent has to like think about what he has to do. It's like, I don't know, it seems like the typical Shaman deck is exactly as it was before, except you get like
Evolves.
I don't know. A fell reaver by default in your deck.
Fell reaver, yeah.
Which is really good, by the way. It's really good.
Ridiculous.
But that's like the only change. And like when you don't draw these cards, it feels like a crappy class. And when you do draw the card, sometimes you're losing by so much it doesn't matter. Like I play Shaman quite a bit since the patch. I definitely have been doing better. There's no doubt it's improved. But like the losses are exactly the same as they were before. It's like even if I have the 7/7, I'm like, okay, he backstabbed my 2-drop. He killed my 3-drop for free. I'm playing a 7/7 into 5 minions from a rogue. You know?
Yeah.
Wow. Right. Might as well have Lightning Storm.
Lost you're having less frequently.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I think the consistency went up a lot, and not in terms of how you're drafting the class, but in terms of the hero power and being able to outvalue your opponents. So when everything kind of slows down, the same thing what I was saying with the priest, where you just get to do stuff when you didn't get to do stuff before while not having initiative necessarily. And so that was really bad if you had a tempo game and there's a bunch of minions and on turn 5 they play a 3-drop and a 2-drop instead of a 5-drop. Mm-hmm. Your totems are just dead. They're always dead. There's nothing you can do with it. Now you just get to stick random totems on the board that get really annoying, and you get a flip. You get your normal like style, right? Like I agree with Crypt that the playstyle is the same. That has not changed at all. I just think it's more. There are the odds of the playstyle working out has greatly increased because your opponents have less removal and less tempo, rogue aside, and the situation where you just get steamrolled in the very beginning, you never get to get on the board, happens a lot less frequently. And so your odds just kind of shift up, even if the class really does feel like the same class with a few more powerful cards. Its consistency in practice, I think, just went up a lot. And that's one of the things Shaman was missing, was just getting those totems to actually do something in most games.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Go ahead, Pratsma. You got a last, you got some more comments?
Yeah, I can close it out here. I mean, Shaman, I mean, it'll always be like a... like quality, card quality, like base class. I don't think there's anything around that just because the hero power is such a high variability of like how good it can be as opposed to like how useless it can be. Mm-hmm. But it does seem a lot more consistent now.
All totems are the same. I treat all totems the same. They're just quality on the board.
In a deck with like three flame tongues and a deck with like no flame tongues, they're not the same, dude.
Oh yeah, that's what I mean though. But once you have a flame tongue, All those things are the same. They're just bodies on the board that you're going to throw away.
you just got to draw that bad boy, though.
Yeah.
Okay, so, well, it wasn't that long ago that it walked in. You know, you had that whole hashtag, you know, Warriors Need Love, too. And, you know, we've seen some improvement with Warriors with the last two expansions, you know, and maybe even three expansions. But... you know, I think we're in the kind of the same place right at this point. I feel like with these bottom, at least Hunter. I mean, we haven't seen any changes, I think, for these classes. We talked to Priest about a little bit, but what about Hunter? Like, are we gonna ever see Hunter in even just mid tier? You guys think? I mean, what would it need?
Well, Hunter's better now because there's fewer heals as opposed to the card pool that's actually selected from cards in Arena.
It's a relative thing. Okay.
Yeah.
There's also more taunts though.
Yeah. There's more taunts. But I don't know. Hunter just does the same thing. I think the relative card quality is about the same. They didn't advance at all.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter's also a very difficult class to play. I think most classes, let's say half the games, you have to make the decision, can I win in a control game or do I have to start going face? In Hunter, it's when do I have to give up the control game and start going face in every single game?
Right.
Even if you're a great player, you have so many opportunities to screw up your win condition.
Yep.
So it's really hard to play, and even if you play well, you're at a disadvantage.
Yeah. I think if you look back at Naxx, the late period of Classic and the early period of Naxx before the buzzer nerf, you had Hunter was a pretty mid-tier Arena class.
It was I don't know if it was number five.
But I think I went 12-0 with Hunter in like a week twice.
Yeah,
and it was just quad unleash, 2-mana unleash. Get at me.
Looking insane.
Exactly. So it's not unthinkable for Hunter to make a comeback. You do need... it was a combo deck. It was like the official combo Arena deck. And they got rid of it for, I think, good reasons.
Any class needs in Arena is a ridiculous common card within this set that has the occurrence bonus that costs half the mana it should.
That's all. Oh my god.
Well, hey, Shaman got it.
Yeah, Shaman did get it. That's true. That's true.
Oh, so, I mean, for 100,
it's free and with Shaman. Holy crap.
Yeah.
You kind of just need like more 1-2 combos. It's like, like Glaive Zuko was a great addition for Hunter.
Yes.
It actually put Hunter on the board, or like, you know, before that, it was so difficult to get early board control. But another card like Glaive Zuko, I don't know whether it should be a minion or a spell, could probably make Hunter pretty viable. But yeah, it is such a difficult class to play, because I think that may be like the high skill requirement thing to do, is to gauge like, you know, when it's when it is like time to switch into just like a face game.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think Hunter probably deserves a lot of good cards just to try to convince people to play it.
Yeah, and you gotta, if you're thinking about this in terms of design for making the arena a more varied place, you want unique classes like Hunter and Priest and Warlock, more so than even Warrior or Druid, to be very viable. So then you see them, and you have to, every time I'm playing Hunter or Priest, I'm playing a different game. I'm not playing anything remotely similar to what I usually play. And that's good. That's good for the longevity of the game. It's good to keep players interested, and it lets people like pick their favorite class and specialize in it. Rogue kind of has the same idea to it, where it's a very special class. You have to play in a certain way. Mage is vanilla. Paladin is pretty vanilla. Like, you have your things that you do, but
I don't think
they're
Mage
not
is vanilla. I think Mage, you kind of get to choose what you want to play.
I think Otto brings up a good point, and I totally agree, dude. Like, most games are pretty linear. Like, you'll see a 2-drop on 2, 3-drop on 3, 4-drop on 4. You play against a Hunter, you're gonna see crazy shit, like 2-drop, 1-drop, 1-drop on turn 4, you know? You're gonna see, like, insane things. And I feel like, you know, keeping us excited and making every game different is very important. You know, you gotta, like, switch gears when you're playing against Hunter. And, like, there are certain classes that you do this against. Hunter is definitely probably the most prominent one. The one that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's why I love facing Warlocks. I have a whole game plan against Warlocks, and I have a very high win rate against Warlocks, and I'm very proud of it. I focus on not just hit face, but that's a very prominent part of it. You just you have to adjust your play, and I feel like 80% of players don't even do that adjustment, right? The like hit face adjustment, because if you want the Warlock to have less cards, you hit the face, you don't clear the board. He can buff his minion, clear your minion, but you would still give him less cards over the long run if you're thinking of playing a long game. So it's very backwards. But that's something that... If
you're playing a short game, you're doing the same thing, right?
Okay, so
it's always the same. It's always smart,
a really game.
Unless you need to clear the board so that you can buff your hitting face. And that's... Like, if more people realize that, I think they would have much higher success against Warlocks, and Warlocks will be knocked down a peg. But the reality is, I would say if I'm Warlock and I'm facing people, maybe a quarter of the people I can see trying to do that. That's probably even overestimating it. The rest of the people I see just trying to treat me like a mage, which means I'm better than I should be.
And that's the advantage we get. I mean, especially playing like Warlock or Hunter, right? Like, when you're playing Hunter and your opponent like trades space damage, it's the most interesting thing to see.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, well... That's the class rankings that we have for now. So I wanted to move on and talk about the top five cards, actually, you guys have chosen for the expansion, or at least the top five cards that have had the most impact on the meta. So let me bring that up real quick here. And okay. So again, I'm just going to read these out real quick. Some similarities, as you can tell, the top row is pretty much all the same. But Creeparian has, Nerubian, Prophet, Bog Creeper, Flame, Wreath, Faceless, Ravaging Ghoul, Shadow Strike. Edwakta has Nerubian Prophet, Bog Creeper, Aberrant, Berserker, Psychotron, Faceless Summoner. And Ratsma has Nerubian Prophet, Bog Creeper, Squirming Tentacle, Corrupted Seer, and Twilight Flame Walker.
Okay, for the record, I gave 10 cards.
You did give me 10 cards. That's just the first
five. I
gave
them in the same kind of order I do, where neutrals came first and then class cards. So
okay. Yeah. Okay.
That's why the first
I'll let you add
neutrals.
A few. Yeah, we can add a couple of those too. Like your full list had.
Aberrant Berserker makes the top 10.
Yeah, it does. But I love Aberrant Berserker. Oh my god, I love that card so much.
No, but Edwakta did have Flame Wreath, Faceless, and Shadow Strike also, as well as Divine Strength, Twilight Flame Caller, and Darkshire Councilman. So keep those in mind, guys.
Warlocks, okay. Some love.
Yeah, definitely. But let's talk about the similarities first. I mean, obviously, this is consensus. It must be a consensus with, I think, most very good Arena players. So talk about Nerubian Prophet. Krip, why don't you talk about why it's so powerful?
Well, if you guys think it's a slow game, I don't think you would consider that card like completely insane. It's a really good card if it's a slow game, because you keep in your opening hand 3-mana 4/4. That's better than an ogre, because it's an ogre without the chance that it costs you the game. Right. Specifically in the late game, the worst thing is when your ogre like just kills itself on a Boulder Fist or something just randomly. I mean, that's always fun. So it's usually better than a Boulder Fist ogre any stage in the game, with potentially much better. Often you keep it in your opening hand, and on turn three, you have a card that in the given situation is as good as a 4/4. So your opponent might have, like, let's say a 2/3 minion. If you play a 3/3, it would do the same thing as the Nerubian Prophet. So you could play the Nerubian Prophet the next turn, and then it would be a 2-mana 4/4. And if you play it with a 2-drop, you generally have won that game. So it's just a superpower card because of the flexibility, but it's mostly because of the tempo potential in the early game. I feel 3-mana 4/4 or 2-mana 4/4 on turn four, those are generally game winning plays.
How many Nerubian Prophets do you like to pick? Like, if you had the choice of maximum, how many would you take?
I could probably replace every 3-drop in the deck, so I guess six.
Wow. Okay, six. That's cool. All right. Same thoughts from you guys? Edwakta and Ratsma?
Yeah. Okay. It's a good card.
Anything to add? Anything?
Just if you get in the late game, the best part, well, not the best part about it, the best part about its downside, because it looks like it's a 6-mana 4/4, and that's pretty bad. But if you get it in the late game when you're top decking or near top decking, the mana literally doesn't matter. It's any mana card that is a 4/4. And if you just look at it as a 4/4, it's kind of a normal card. You're not terribly upset by it. You're going to have enough 2-drops and 3-drops for this guy to attack into if you have the board. And if you don't have the board, 4 health, 4 attack, very normal size. Even its downside, if you're thinking about the long term and you don't get it early on, is not that bad. There's just that awkward middle zone, and that middle zone really doesn't last as long as I think people may think it does in their heads.
It's like when you draw them on turn three, basically.
Yeah.
Okay.
My understanding was that this was like most impactful cards to the meta, not necessarily like strong cards, because they don't necessarily, those two things are not the same.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say it definitely changed the meta, just because, you know, you don't expect such a strong tempo play, especially when someone's been holding in their hand. For them to like be behind on the board and then remove something and then play that for 1 mana or 0 mana is a huge board flip. Usually games are won and lost off like 2 mana. But this thing is like a 3-drop, arguably as good as a 4-drop. You know, that's a 4-mana swing. It makes a huge deal, and it changes the way you play the game. It also changes the way you kind of play against other people when you think they may possibly have this card. So it definitely has changed the meta quite a bit.
Okay. Bog Creeper, another one that was very just similar between you guys. Nice big taunt. And Ratsman, you were talking about just how powerful taunt can be, especially when we were talking about the Druid class. Talk about the strength of this and why it's so impactful.
Yeah, I mean, the stat allocation of it is great. It's better than Ironbark for cost. Like the 8 damage, the 2 more damage on Ironbark than this card is really not worth it. There's not so too many more things that you'll kill, and there's not that many situations where you're going to need the 2 extra damage. Mm-hmm. And just having like a neutral card be a huge wall at the end, this is what makes a lot of classes weaker, and this is why we say Hunter sucks now, is, you know, this is a neutral card, neutral Ironbark, that makes closing out games much, much more difficult. And it changes, it definitely, it's just a huge change to like how long you kind of plan your ending a game, because you can kind of expect barrier taunts to come out towards the end.
Yeah, I think this this extends the game. It's the big taunt that prevents the aggro decks from ending the game unless removal in their hand for it. Mm-hmm. So if they had 1 hard removal, they're going to need 2 now. If they had 3, they're going to need if they needed 3, they're going to need 4 now. If they needed 2, they're going to need 3 now. Mm-hmm. And hard removals are less common now on top of that. Okay. So it's made that entire strategy very much, do you have the cards? Once you have the hard removals or the large removals, which is kind of easy to get in like Mage and Rogue, but kind of hard to get in most other classes, then you can do an aggro control style. If you don't have it, trying to do that, like say if you're a hunter, that's just going to be you gotta pray to either get the card or that your opponent just happens to not have these cards for for many games so that you can win. And more than the bot group, but this whole meta is like that, right? Like looking down, I did put Cyclotron in there. Mm-hmm. It's much less powerful than a bot creeper, but still very powerful, and you still see it everywhere in the meta. And it's completely wrecked hunter, right? There's no hero power ping for the hunter to get to ping the Cyclotron. 3 damage is enough to kill most of the hunter minions that they're going to put out. So you're going to throw 3 cards into this five mana card, and you have no way to get around it.
Also changed how we draft too.
I do want to mention before we get off topic on the bot creeper, I think I disagree with most of the tier lists out there. I think the bot creeper is slightly worse than most of the people. I just compare it to Kraken. I think Kraken is better than bot creeper in every single class except maybe Rogue, because with Rogue, if you're winning with a bunch of small minions, you play that. You basically get a free wave of attack with your small minions, which is typically better than Kraken.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I think we have Kraken above Creeper in every class except Warlock and Rogue. Mm-hmm. Actually, I don't know. Maybe Rogue Kraken is still even above Bob Creeper.
Kraken is actually a card I wanted to put on here, but it's not a new card. It just got so much stronger with this meta.
Yeah.
Like any huge cards, like good huge cards, are so good right now.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, I feel like Bog Creeper is as powerful as Kraken, but because it has no on-play effect, it's far less consistent. So,
Taunt is arguably an on-play effect.
Sort of.
It's like, unless your opponent can remove it.
That's right, yeah. Exactly.
And I mean, the Kraken was always that it was 9 mana, and that matters less in a slow meta, so... It's just a lot of things working in favor of the Kraken right now.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of removal, Krip, you have the Shadow Strike in there, and Edwakta, you actually had that card too. I guess talk about the strength of that card. I mean, it's obviously another removal card that doesn't require a combo for Rogue and.
So Rogue had like, I don't know if they had more or less removal than Mage, but let's just say they had a lot compared to most classes. And Mage, I mean, they got like that new thing that scales off your mana, but who are we kidding? And then Rogue got actually a good card, and it's in the common slot. So in a game where removal is premium and everybody has less and Rogue has more, this is a pretty influential card.
Okay. The way I like to look at it is like with a lot of like cheaper removal, you have a lot more room to draft greedy, more expensive minions. And Rogue being such a flexible class that could already be played in a very heavy control manner, it makes that playstyle so much more viable and makes drafting so much easier for Rogues, where you can just, you know, all of a sudden you're drafting a slow Rogue deck and you're okay because, you know, Sinister Strikes are coming up or, you know, you already have some in your deck. Oh, Shadow Strike, sorry. Not Sinister Strike. But, it's a great card, you know. A lot of things in Arena have 5 health, too.
Yeah, I use the Shadow Strike over Eviscerate in a few constructed decks. Decks that have trouble comboing cards and don't care as much about face damage as board control. I think Shadow Strike is better than Eviscerate in constructed. And I think that doesn't resemble every Arena deck. Some Arena decks you definitely want to go face with 4 damage, potentially. But if you have like a very Zoo-like Rogue deck, like mostly sticky minions and mostly high health, low attack minions, and very few easy combo activators like backstabs and one drops, I think Shadow Strike could potentially be better than Eviscerate. And Eviscerate's a pretty good card in Arena.
Yeah, that's true. So it's a Death Rattle ish kind of Rogue, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. I think the key part about Shadow Strike is it's 5 damage. Nothing's 5 damage. So it absolutely wrecks expectations. Not that you have much against the Rogue. But to whatever extent you thought you were safe, you're now 1 more damage not safe.
Yeah, it almost makes like every four drop, almost every four drop in the game, except for the six.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope.
And in the Flame Wreath.
Yeah. Yeah, if your opponent's on turn four and you played first, so that you get to play your five mana first, you Shadow Strike, you play a two mana card. Could be a Defias Ringleader, could be not a Defias Ringleader. Either way, you're looking really good now as the Rogue.
Yeah.
And they just played a Yeti, which should be unstoppable.
I do also want to mention
major downside. Yeah, yeah, go ahead, dude. Go ahead.
Sorry. I think Rogue is the only class that you want to hero power sometime in the first four turns. So
yeah,
you also don't need as many two drops as everyone else, which means you can have higher quality early game. But that actually stresses the one and three slot more. So the fact that it's three mana actually plays into that a little bit as well.
I mean, the only downside it really has is it doesn't go face. But how often are you in a situation
it
where
can
you need
go
to
face
to close out?
It can go face?
It can. It can if they're at 30 health.
Oh, okay. Or eight. You know, major domo. Mm-hmm. It can happen.
You know, there's not that many games where you need to close out a game with damage in Arena.
Right.
So, and that lack of flexibility is fine.
Speaking of removal, there's like three other cards that just they're different for all just between the three of you guys that have removal battle cries. So we're talking Ravaging Ghoul from Crypt, and as well as Twilight Flamewalker and Corrupted Seer from Ratsma. So those two cards are pretty surprising, Ratsma. Why don't you talk about that? Does that just have a lot to do with the really quick decks?
Which one? Which two?
The Corrupted Seer and the Twilight Flamewalker.
Okay, so the Twilight Flamecaller, I think I had this grouped with Ravaging Ghoul, because they pretty much are very similar cards. Mm-hmm. The main purpose and the big difference is, you know, these, like, what the one health minion flood doesn't happen as often with these cards. It's a great card against certain classes like Warlock or Paladin, and it just makes those classes that were much stronger before a lot weaker, and definitely impactful to the meta.
Mm-hmm. Okay, what about Corrupted Seer? I mean, it seems like a very expensive card for what it does.
Yeah, I mean,
it's such a small body.
It is. It's really expensive, but the utility of it's great. I mean, you can't not expect AoE from every class anymore. Like, usually you'll flood against like warriors or like rogue even, you'll flood against. But mm-hmm. now with Corrupted Seer, you got to kind of, you know, watch out for that. And it's picked often enough that you can kind of like anticipate it happening, especially with it being so expensive. And, you know, you keep your eye on your opponent's cards. And yeah.
Okay.
Actually, I think with no real board clears being introduced in the game and thus saturating the card pool even further, you almost flood against everything. And I kind of see that against me as well.
Yep.
So, like, a lot of the clear cards have to do with how much credit you give your opponent for possibly having that answer. And in a lot of situations, you just don't care. Like, if you play against the board clear, if they have it, well, they're going to win. If mm-hmm. they don't have it, well, you're going to win. And these are just cards that punish those type of plays. And those plays are more common now because these cards are rare. So the few pieces that we did get, like Corrupted Seer, make a big difference. It's very obvious when you play against the mage. You play against the mage. How many wins do you have? 5 and 2? Are you going to play against Blizzard? No, you're not. And then you get Corrupted Seer and you lose the game. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what we're talking about here. And that's why I actually feel Ghoul is better than the Twilight Flamecaller. I think the cards are basically the same thing, as Rotsma said, but they have the difference in how much credit you give for that effect. Are you going to expect a mage to do one damage to multiple targets? Yeah, kind of. But are you going to play
really
around a whirlwind effect? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like mage in the early game has no good AoE clear. Like, what do you have? Arcane Explosion and
I've seen Arcane Explosion.
Missiles.
I've seen Arcane Missile. I've seen Flame Wakers. Mages really like to pick bombers, jugglers,
yeah.
Everything. I don't know. It's gone wrong a lot.
I mean, it's definitely less, it's more hidden with Ravaging Ghoul, but with Twilight Flamecaller, I think it's just as good in Mage as Ravaging Ghoul is in Warrior. I think it's nice to have that utility of not getting rushed down, because that's one of your major lose conditions as Mage, because you're playing such a high-value class that, mm-hmm. you know, generally is just one of the most powerful, and, like, your lose condition is getting rushed down, then Twilight Flamecaller is a great card to have in your hand.
Well, that's kind of where I disagree. I think if they were both Mage cards, it'd be as good. If they were both Warrior cards, it'd be as good, but I think it being a warrior card makes it better.
Oh, that's what you mean.
I think Ravaging Ghoul is insanely good in the warrior. It's a whirlwind effect when your normal whirlwind effect is attached to a weapon that you can't use on the turn. So it's a completely unexpected thing for warrior to do. It's not a death spite. It's got the surprise factor there, and it's a 3/3 body. Like we're talking about its effects, but Twilight Flamecaller is the same mana for a 2/2 body. That's one extra mana's worth of tempo on the board, which is worth a lot, not just on turn three, but overall. And also, warriors tend to pick more, well, as much as if not more, things that require self pings, because they have things like Cruel Taskmaster. They have things like Battle Rage. And so Ravaging Ghoul's downside isn't even necessarily a downside all the time for Warrior. I would put Ravaging Ghoul ahead of Twilight Flamecaller. But to go back to what Krip was saying about the removals, like Consecrations and, I don't know, maybe Hellfire, it's just the board clears and how they're not seen in the arena anymore as frequently. I get this comment so often from Twitch chat. Where I'm like Krip, I don't play around them unless there's absolutely no reason not to play around them. It's a pretty minor consideration for me when I'm playing against classes now. And a lot of people who are good arena players or are frequent arena players, they're still in the mindset that you should be playing around all of these cards all the time from a earlier meta. And that's really just not the case right now. And I think you get, like, if you go, you know, to any of our channels, we'll all take flack for not playing around these cards. But more often than not, it's just correct to not play around these cards, especially if, like, you're playing, like, aggro control, like Krip was saying, and or if you're playing Snowball, which is the other good archetype. Like, that's what you have to do. That's where your power is. If you don't do that, I don't know what, like, you're just hurting yourself in the long run just to not get screwed over and be embarrassed. Like, get screwed over. Be embarrassed. You'll have a higher win rate.
Yeah, that's actually really good advice. Yeah, that's actually really good advice. And I guess it's just one of these things where, like, you know, Ratsma, you were talking about that the threat's there, and that's kind of why it's meta impactful. But is it the actuality there? You know, Edwalk, to, like, you know, when you're scoring these cards, you know, do you score these cards higher? You know, in terms of whether you should pick them or not. And it sounds like it's not quite that way. You know, it's good that they exist. And it's good that, you know, that the threat's there, but generally speaking, it doesn't sound like it is being used quite to that extent.
Talking about Twilight Flamecaller?
Yeah, just general. I guess a lot of these work. I mean, Ravaging Ghoul obviously is just powerful for a lot of
The Flamecaller has another perk that we didn't talk about. It's that, like, sometimes you do play around board clears because it's not costly. Yeah. Like, you play around Flamestrike by playing, like, three minions with 5 health. Or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And the flame caller is good because it kind of punishes that. You actually see that kind of a lot. At least I tend to do that, where you can do Flame Strike plus one.
Like, right?
Sometimes they play around Flame Strike. Nobody plays around Flame Strike.
It's a kobold geomancer all of a sudden. Yeah. Okay, that's cool. All right, last card to talk about, Aberrant. The Faceless is pretty obvious. I think the Faceless is a nice 7/7 at 4, so extremely good. But the Aberrant, that's a surprising card.
Oh, Aberrant Berserker is. It was always my sleeper pick for most difference, like the largest difference maker of the common neutral cards. Between a good and a bad. Like, you look at Nerubian Prophet. I guess Nerubian Prophet has a skill in terms of when you play it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you, like, let it keep costing less and less mana? You basically gain one more tempo each turn you hold it, or do you just play it out to get the tempo a bit earlier? Because it's usually the best tempo card that you can play once it becomes 3 mana.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Bog Creepers, Psychotrons, they're big taunts. You play them when you need a bigger taunt. It's not the most skill-related card. Aberrant Berserker, when you play it over a Yeti, when you play it to try to get that 5 attack, because if you don't get the enrage effect, it's a 3/5, and those are not so good in this meta. But once you get the enrage effect, in order to anticipate your opponent's likely next moves and to have that 5 attack matter, that's game-changing when you're playing such an on-the-board kind of game. And Aberrant Berserker lets you do that. Like, if you need to play it as a 4-drop, it doesn't really matter. You play it as a 4-drop because you don't have other things to play. But later on in the game, or when you're deciding attack order or what you're removing with your small removals, the Abram Berserker's Enrage effect is this game's most influential Enrage effect that we see. Like, it's so much more influential than Amani Berserker outside of Mage. Because you can actually, to a reasonable degree of certainty, force your opponents to play different types of games just by having this guy out there. Or they get punished fairly hard. Not like necessarily game-winning every time, but hard enough that you'll swing back maybe 2-3 more tempos worth than what they were anticipating before. Like, on turn 4, 3 attack is fine. On turn 5, 5 attack is great. 4 attack is not so great.
I'd like to add that it's also really good for playing around AoE. Like, you just put this on any board that's a little bit low health, you know, and then bam, you got the Imani effect or the Raging Morgan effect where you just, you know, kind of punish them for clearing or trying to clear.
Do you guys think it's better than Chillman Yeti?
No.
I do.
Ever.
Wow. Okay.
I think on the tier list, I rated it the same.
It's kind of why, like, you're talking it up and everything you're saying is right, but I still don't think it's better than, like, the Vanilla 4.
No, I think it's too hard to get that Enrage effect to be actually good.
Here's what usually happens with the Aberrant Berserker. If it's on 4, you still don't always get great value because if you don't have board control, then your opponents, like a lot of 3 drops, I mean, we can just look at the top of the list, have more than 3 health. So you see the 3 drop trade in it and the 2 drop finishes it. And that makes it kind of crappy. Like the 4 attack breakpoint is actually pretty important for 4 drops, so much so that 4 fours might be better than 3/5s in a lot of situations.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that on turn 4, this card is not as good as Yeti, but you're more likely to play a 4-mana card not on turn 4 than on turn 4, especially with the extended games, but even without the extended games. That's just how the math works out. And this also has the larger impact when it comes to stopping the two archetypes that we're talking about that have the highest win rate that you're watching out most for in when your run goes very high at win rates, which is aggro control and snowball. Yes, in aggro control, they'll probably remove it, but it's at least got 5 health, right? So it's basically a Yeti if they're actually just using a spell to remove it. But if it's a snowball deck, it really does need something with 4 health, which they will have less than half the time, something that will take care of an Abram Berserker the way you're describing, that's not in the same way that they'll be able to take care of a Yeti as well. So if you see things like Scarlet Crusader, that deals with both kind of similarly. If you only need 2 damage, something like Harvest Golem deals with them both the same. It is the 3/4s and the 4/4s that you do see that where the Yeti shines more on turn 4. So I do agree that Yeti is better on turn 4, but Aberrant Berserker is better almost every turn after that. When it comes to, like, if you have any amount of control over what you're doing instead of, like, just having to play a card, right? Like, if you just have to play it, it's not that much worse than a Yeti. If you can actually plan your moves because you're given that luxury, which you are more often in this meta, then you can get the extra value. And that's what I like about it. I think on the Lightforged tier list, we rated the same because I think part of that is Merps not seeing this card the way I see it. But we also just didn't want to step out there and say, like, yes, everyone, pick Abram Berserker over Yeti.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Please, guys, do that. Please.
Right.
Bring it on.
Oh, man. They're going to all be blaming you, man, otherwise. Like, after
this
show.
It's in Mage, and I think Warrior, too.
Oh, okay. So. All right. That's cool. All right. Well, that concludes the cards. And, you know, hopefully you guys will. That's cool. All right, well, that concludes the cards. And, you know, hopefully you guys will take something from that discussion. Definitely good stuff. Lots of good tidbits there. But next, I wanted to talk about just arena events. You know, something that we just don't see in the community at all. You know, we did have some lore. You know, Lord of the Arena was like the first thing that we ever saw. Mm-hmm. And of course, there's limitations to that because Hearthstone doesn't allow you to really be able to build true arena decks. But you know, we're starting to see. You know, we saw this 110 thing that was started with just as a bet, right? With Amaz and I think it was just Hafu or just a group of you guys, and even you, Ratsum, right? But you know, the interest that we've seen in it, like on Reddit, it just makes me think that we should come up with something that's arena centric. You know, whether it is some kind of just more challenges, maybe it's just like how many 12 wins can we get with Hunter in a row? You know, and things like that. You know, I don't know. What are your thoughts on it? I'll start with you, Ratsum.
Yo, give us anything.
Give us anything.
Especially, I mean, Crypt plays constructed, so he's fine. We're getting bored out of our mind. We need something to, like, work on. And, I mean, 110 is cool, but it's also just, it's so much luck-based, and I'm sure you guys agree. Mm-hmm. And I predicted that with 110, people would complete it if they got lucky enough to get offered the best classes over and over again. But actually, one person, Meth, I want to give him a shout out here. He completed the 110 playing every single class, which is extremely impressive. And that's what I thought the 110 should have been in the first place, is, you know, maybe 90 and 9, where you got to play every single class. But I mean, it doesn't even have to be anything like super challenging. Maybe we can have like a weekly thing where, you know, you play with the community as well, like streamers and community. Everyone records their first 10 runs for the week, and then we kind of compare and we just have fun that way. Like, anything would be
absolutely
good.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
I think Blizzard really needs to step in at some point, and I think they will. It's just like a matter of whether they do it, you know, next year or 5 years from now. And the 5 years from now option is obviously a bad one. but the game doesn't support Arena on anything except a personal level, right? That's why the 110 is basically personal high score. It's a fancy way of putting personal high score, but it really is personal high score. Like, Crypt got, like, just last night, right? What was it? Like, 8-12-1 runs in nine runs, which is insane. It's not 110, but the 110 is an arbitrary set of rules that makes it an achievement, and so is getting 8-12-1 runs in nine runs playing whatever class, right? And this is the kind of stuff that whatever we do with that, that's all we can do, because that's all that Blizzard has given us. When people try to run tournaments, it's extremely complicated, right? Like, Lord of the Arena was forced to end up with four contestants, because it just costs so much amount of time and organization to add even four more people. And just to even get four people in a tournament that's fitting under the time constraints with the drafting, with everything, it's very difficult. And you can't even do it in the client. You have to pull it out. Just so many things are making... like, since I've started streaming, there's a lot of things that I get, you know, people soliciting me for stuff now that they think I'm a streamer and I know things about things, or I know people or whatever, I don't know. But a consistent solicitation that I always get are from these tournament sites that by all accounts look like very functional, good tournament sites who want me to partner up with them and run a tournament or something. And so they get publicity and they'll like pay me money or something. Right. And every time I say, okay, this sounds great. Do you do arena tournaments? And they're like, what's arena? And I'm like, nope, can't do it.
I'm not going to explain it.
Exactly. If you don't support that, I'm not, like, your software is not going to support this arena thing, right? This is a very unique thing that you have to do. Yeah, right. So if Blizzard supported it in the client, these websites will pick it up immediately, and then we will have some kind of, even like a local tournament scenes, small group tournament scenes, people who think they're good at arena tournament scene, like whatever, right?
Sure.
Like, there'll be stuff. But Blizzard, like it or not, I think Blizzard has to be the first mover on this. I don't think people, like what Amaz did with 110 challenges is great and all, and Twitch picking it up was amazing, but at the end of the day, that's just a high score. You can put a bow on it. It's just a high score. And Blizzard has to do the major lifting when it comes to this.
Okay. Crypt, you know, obviously you and Ronnie have done Challenge Stone and just creative things, you know, just to try to work around things. Or just to work around the client or whatever, any kind of limitations with that or general events. Any ideas for an arena event that would be, you know, pretty... It would at least exemplify or just like show the highest skilled players and that sort of thing?
No, not really.
No ideas? That's not what we're looking for. Dang it.
Anyone can just pick up Hearthstone, not really know what's going on, and get unbelievably lucky and go 12 wins. People watch tournaments because they think the better player is going to win more often than not. And to the degree that that happens is going to be more realistic than in an arena tournament. Right. Like, in an arena tournament, the worst player is going to win probably close to 50%. Really close. Hearthstone already struggles from that problem. The arena format is a more restrictive one within the game as a whole. Mm-hmm. So in Constructed, it's like, what cards do you want? Go play them. in Arena is like, you have to pick from these cards that are randomly selected after you get a random class, and then you try to make a deck out of it. So it's a restriction on the format already. It's not a surprise to me that it's difficult to make tournaments on it, because it's a more restrictive format than the regular tournament format. So I don't know. I enjoyed Lord of the Arena a lot. I think that format was good because it was pure to the Arena format. I think it was particularly good when they introduced people who don't even play Hearthstone that much, because you kind of got to see the difference in play and decisions. And even though I guess some feelings were hurt and some people were like, oh man, this is so unprofessional, whatever, on Reddit, like, in the end, I thought the tournament was a lot more fun that way. Just because it really promoted the good aspect of it. Like, Arena is just a more fun way to play the game. You get people who move into the tournament with the fun in mind rather than the competition in mind. I think it's actually better for everyone. I think the direction that people are trying to push the Arena genre in the tournament scene is the wrong one. People barely care if you win an actual tournament. They're going to care a lot less if you care in Arena tournament.
Not a bad point. Do you like this whole high score thing? Just leaderboard, you know?
Yeah, it's okay. I don't know. I don't find Arena boring at all. I find it as the best way to play Hearthstone. And I also want to mention, like, yeah, the rewards in Arena are bad. But
yes,
if you compare them to the other aspects of the game, they're great.
So, wait, what? Wait, what do you mean?
What do you get for playing ranked?
You get two golden cards
for the month. I just got two golden cards in my last Arena run, right?
So, right.
I don't see that as an Arena specific problem, more so as a Hearthstone problem. But I don't know. I'm more lighthearted about the competition of Hearthstone. Yeah, but
yeah, I'm thinking more just like getting tournaments out there so people can play.
I think the accessibility could be something that Blizzard should put initiative on, like, to just make it easier to do an event like Lord of the Arena.
Yeah.
But I don't think there are too many stages past that. I don't think it's going to... you're just not going to have people take like Arena tournaments seriously as a whole. So focusing on the serious side of it, I think, is not really the good direction to move it in.
I agree that focusing on the serious side is not the direction it should go. I think focusing on the community side is definitely the direction a limited format should go. I do think people do take it somewhat seriously, though. Like, just looking at Magic, it is like a legitimate format for a competition. Limited, and they maybe not like, it's not the exact format of Hearthstone Arena, but it shares a lot of similar high RNG elements in deck creation. And so I think there's a model for it to be competitive. I think we're many steps away from that. The first step is to actually make people be able to play other people rather than just do co-ops.
Yeah.
I love co-ops.
Sure.
You know, we've been doing co-ops our entire time, but at the same time, we also want to play against people when we make these decks.
Well, I mean, we just want some kind of measuring stick too, right? There's these rankings that we all hear behind the scenes and stuff, but, you know, there's nothing that's like super public, and I don't know. It's just something that I think a lot of people would just like to see, like to know, or like to, you know, at least put people in this kind of gauntlet, you know, when it comes to just the Arena format as entertainment. You know, it doesn't matter about winning titles and stuff and events like that, but like Lord of the Arena got a ton of viewers. Like, it was just fun. You know, it was fun, but it was also, you saw skill involved. You saw all the skill of the you know, Arena players just drafting. I mean, we say that all the time in your streams and stuff, but I don't know. There's another element to it, right? When there's more parameters put to it, it's just one of those things that I think a lot of people would like to see.
I think you're focusing on the different sides. You're focusing on, well, you can get a good event, people will have fun, and they'll watch it, and it'll be cool. Crip is focusing on, okay, but that really doesn't show you anything close to who the best player is, no matter how structured, because of the format.
I mean, even Arena tournaments aren't even true to the format. Like, you're playing against other people.
Yeah.
I mean, draft, not even being able to draft three cards, it's fine. Doesn't happen that often. But your Arena is, you know, everything's supposed to be random. You're supposed to get random cards. Your opponents are random. Maybe they're really good. Maybe they're really bad.
Yeah.
That's what makes it fun. And when you're, you know, when you're just drafting a deck and then playing against the same person three times, it's not so much Arena anymore.
Yes,
yeah.
And I
You know what's in their deck on the second game.
That's true.
That's not Arena at all, unless you're watching one of your fellow streamers.
Arena 2.0.
Yeah, so maybe I guess leaderboard is the best thing that we have for a while now.
Even that, I kind of disagree with. I know a lot of people love Arena rankings and stuff, and I think I'm in an okay position to talk to criticize this because I think I'm doing okay.
Yes, you're doing pretty well. All of you guys are.
I kind of feel like, you know, pressure to win, and that's good. Although, you know, I do pick a lot of the same classes, a lot of the best classes, I've generally picked things that I've find most fun. And as it so happens, that's been Rogue and Mage for the last couple of years, because those are the classes that you don't have to take like an absurd amount of risk. You don't have to pray your opponents have answers constantly. Those are generally the proactive classes, as we talked about.
That's the way to do it, though. Like, we're not playing chess or something extremely competitive or high skill cap. It's supposed to be a fun game, and you should probably just play the classes you like playing.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I feel like the moment we have like public leaderboards, people are going to take it so seriously. Like, you are never going to see another priest in Arena ever again.
That's probably true.
It will not happen.
Yeah.
So I think
you get like
that
monthly leaderboards is
an arena experience for a lot of people.
Well, here, but
yeah, you get like a weekly leaderboard, then people would still experiment.
No,
like a fun thing.
I don't know.
No, but Crit, you could have leaderboards that are class specific, like, you know, just like the best, you know, priest arena player or the best, you know, that sort of thing, right? I mean, that would be interesting.
Even then, to be good in a class, you have to experiment. So you'd have to have like class specific leaderboards by the week, and then, like, you know, when you're putting it that, you have the issue of how many priest arena runs can you actually do in a week, like 3? Well, even if you're a really good priest, there's going to be some other guy out there that just got 12 wins 3 times. So like it's a mess. There's no doubt it's a big mess. So I'm not surprised they haven't tried to sort it out.
It doesn't have to be so competitive either.
This is why
I say you want to do things with the community as a whole. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't have to be a leaderboard. Well, maybe it could be like, you know, 1 week, you know, you Blizzard makes it more likely that you draft cards that are already in your deck. So
we talk about how it doesn't have to be competitive, and like the competitive scale of ranked is still kind of a joke. Like who really cares if you got legend, right? But people, like, you play ranked like a month ago, that's like 60% secret paladin, right? So you have like any form of competitive introduced into the format, and people do take that thing really seriously. And I think in ranked we see it. I think it obviously hurts the game.
Yeah, I agree with that.
People are not playing what they find fun in ladder. They just don't. That's the end of it. So I'd rather that not happen in Arena.
Yeah, but
like, I don't know. I have fun playing all classes. That's what I do in every game where there's not a specific physical penalty for me playing a class. Overwatch. I play all the classes because that's what I find fun, right? I don't do it because of any other reason. So I like to play all classes evenly, and I still play Priest. I still play Hunter, or I will play Hunter and OG more when we get to having played more Priest. But I think there's enough. I agree with Crypt that it is going, that influence is definitely going to happen once you put leaderboards on there. And there is a huge sample size problem because you just, like, I don't know, Crip says he's played, what, like 40, 50 runs? I've played like 20-something runs. I don't know how many runs Rats has played. And we do this a lot, right? That's why we're here on this show, because we do it a lot. So if you're an even slightly more casual person about the arena, you're just not going to get a sample size. And it will just be, like, the leaderboard will be filled with people with 12 win runs every single run. Every week, because there's so many people, and that will happen if you narrow it down to class. And if you don't narrow it down to class, people will take Mage and Rogue and Paladin at every opportunity.
Right.
I don't have the solution to it. I definitely see Crypt's problem. And there's, I think it's probably not a dead end if people think more on it. There's got to be a way to separate out the super tryhards from the other people. Maybe like a reward system that rewards lesser played classes. If really the only problem is class, if we're also thinking about experimentation, maybe have higher rewards the more uncommonly picked the cards you pick are. That kind of
stuff.
Or
just make the decks better. Give them like a free legendary in their deck, arena deck.
So
give
every priest
rare.
Three legendary.
Yeah, every priest gets a priest or
Dr. How about
Boom?
This?
Oh, no, no.
This is Crypt tips for Blizzard. How about cards that you can't even get from packs anymore, like the new GVG and Dax formats,
look out.
Maybe have a rarity reworking, you know? Hmm?
Yeah, that would actually be really good.
I fully support that.
Yeah.
Cards that you can get, like Classic and Basic, I feel like the first step should
be... Blizzard's dropped some excuses on those, so you can forget that.
All right.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I just wanted to bring it up just because, now there's another format, which is, Wild introduced. I just feel like there's just going to be more and more formats, and, I just don't want... I'd like to see Arena, because I watch you guys streams a lot, and I think you guys are super skilled, very skilled, and a lot of times, you guys get recognized for it, at least you guys, but there are some other Arena players that I don't get recognized quite as much, and I think it has a little bit to do with just not very many venues to really, get their names out there, for being good at a certain format in Hearthstone, just something. All right, well, why don't we go, why don't we move on to viewer Q&A? Let's just get a few questions here before we wrap it up. It's been an awesome show. But before I start off, actually, there was one question I wanted to kind of kick things off with viewer Q&A, which was I wanted to ask you guys, I guess, what's your favorite just card is? Like, what card, that doesn't have to be the most powerful card or anything like that, but it's just one of those cards that, it brings a smile to your face, or it's just some kind of a comfort level card that when you get it, it's like a fun, it's like fun or good or something, something about it. It can be an old card, it can be a new card. Rats are smiling. What's yours, buddy? What's yours?
Evolve.
Okay. All right.
Just evolve. Even when I'm about to win, sometimes I BM and just evolve and see if I can get a charge to BM. I'm just so addicted to it. I think this has more to do with, like, I don't know. Maybe I'm a fucking gambler, but.
maybe
not maybe.
Okay, evolve. That's a fun
I'll go with another shaman card. I like Flame Tongue Totem for the exact opposite reason, because it kills the RNG. It makes all my totems sacrificial 2-damage things that I keep on the board for one turn, and I throw it in the next turn, and it lets the shaman do what the shaman needs to do, which is to be able to take advantage of a wide board. I think that's very necessary for shaman gameplay, and there's not enough cards like that. Thunderbolt Valiant, I think, was an amazing card to come in into the offering rates, but Flame Tongue Totem's the core. They got to make more cards like Flame Tongue Totem, or they have to up that offering rate.
Yeah, I agree with that. Crip?
I didn't think about this too much, but I picked South Sea Squidface. Every time I pick it, I think it's really cool, and the tier lists don't agree with me.
Wow.
So,
okay.
I kind of like that it seems to be really good. I actually failed me pretty hard in my last Arena run yesterday, but I played with it a lot up until then, and it's just, even outside Arena, it's really nice. It's a really cool card because, as I mentioned, you're almost always playing a hero power between turns 1 to 4, and usually that means 2. By the way, that doesn't usually mean 4. So it adds that extra level of strategy where, if you can set up a situation where you have a 2-charge weapon and you play Squidface on 4 in an even board state, you just kind of wreck your opponent. So that usually alters your play, and it promotes difficult decision making, and you get rewarded for it. Like, if it works out, you're going to destroy your opponent. So I think it's a cool card. And Constructed is just insane with Nazoth. It's insane with Raptor. You can play Brand Raptor, and you can have a 30 attack weapon. Just hilarious.
Wow, okay, that was an unexpected one, man. That's cool. Mm-hmm. Though definitely South Sea, it's a very, very cool one. Let's see, we've got a question. It's kind of a similar question, but do you guys have a favorite card that you should be bad, but for whatever reason it always works over performs for you in Arena? Anybody?
I mean, it's Raid Leader stuff. Like, those cards are pretty decent.
Raid Leader? Okay.
Yeah, I can see that. Okay. Ancient Mage has never been bad for me.
Ancient Mage? Oh, wow. Okay.
And it should be horrible.
Wailing Soul. Wailing Soul. I don't know if it's with how I play. Wailing Soul tends to be better than just a blank 3-5. Like, much better. Gets rid of debuffs and freeze effects. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I have a much better answer. This is actually true, and I try to talk Merps into raising this every time on the tier list. Wisp and Tiny Fit. Every time I've had those cards in my deck, they've done okay. Like, I wouldn't say I'd take them over, like, a two-drop or whatever.
What happened to the taunt meta? Do you know how many whisks get eaten up by some of the cards?
I'm thinking historically. I have not tried a whisk in the OG meta yet. This may not be the right meta to test my theory here.
That's for sure. Oh, man, that's good. All right, oh, this is a good one. This is definitely a good one, especially I've played a lot of Yogg decks recently. But if you got a minion up, but behind on the board, should I attack with it or before or after Yogging?
Which Yogg?
What do you mean which Yogg? Yogg-Saron. Yogg-Saron. Yeah.
Wait. Not the Servant of Yogg-Saron, the actual legendary?
Yeah, the legendary.
Oh, God.
I just assume that you've cast, I don't know, assume that you cast like 10 spells, right? Just on average or something like
no,
that.
No, you attack. I think past like 4 you attack.
Okay. Oh, past like 4. Okay. I think that's
within like
that's
seven.
Yeah.
Within seven, there's generally nothing left on the board.
Seven. I mean, are we talking because it might get buffed?
No, it might be erased.
Well, there's multiple things. It could get buffed, or it could get erased.
Literally, yeah. Oh yeah, because it might
get buffed. Oh yeah, yeah, it might get buffed. Yeah, for sure, it might get buffed.
Well, I mean, like, just always attack first.
If you play like a 30 spell Yogg, there's like a good
no
Savage Roar, Blessed Champion, Kings in there.
There's no way.
It's just usually after everything's dead, so it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. No, I think that's probably good. I'd say maybe six. I don't know. My experience is like either my entire board gets cleared like instantly and then it rebuilds, or it buffs the heck out of everything and then clears the board at the end whenever I play Yogg. So attack first, I think. Just get that value in and...
I would consider attacking with everything before the Servant of Yogg-Saron, which is one.
Yep.
Just for my traumatic experiences with the card.
Me too. That's what I do every time.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Okay, maybe one or two more here. Rival Vinyl, do you think adding in the C'Thun minions to Arena would boost Priest up to your personal tier list? Example, the 4-mana 3/6. I guess the Priest getting that card.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It is a good one.
That card's ridiculous if it was an Arena.
I think it would make Arena more fun.
Imagine you power more tentacles that. 5/12.
If you actually get to draft C'Thun.
Yeah. Yeah, if you get to... I mean, how many times did you draft C'Thun? Gosh.
Yeah, there would only be one problem. It would be like Disciple of C'Thun. That card is really annoying. It's like SI for every class.
Yeah, unless you
like lose your mind.
It would
annihilate two health minions.
One that deals two damage.
You're just not playing two health minions.
I thought that was just going to be good in every single deck in Constructed, but it didn't quite get there. But in Arena, it would literally be good in everything. Be crazy, crazy good. So, okay, that's an interesting thought, though. I mean, they could just add them. I mean, just because you don't have C'Thun.
So the problem is if they add them... Like, from a game design perspective, now that I don't know why they did it specifically, but they're all curve cards. It's like 80% just like normal vanilla on curve cards. That's the last thing this meta needs, like more boring cards. I was like, I flipped completely on this because before OG, I was all about getting more vanilla minions in to stabilize everything. Things were getting a little out of control, and I wanted to like bring things back to Classic. But now we are like back at Classic. We may be even too much on the board back at Classic. We definitely don't want to add a bunch of vanilla minions in this meta. This is not going to help things be more fun.
You miss GVG, man?
No, I miss things after GVG.
No balls on turn three.
GVG was so bad. I spent like 2 months, like two wins per run below my average or something before I eventually adapted.
Okay, last question, more of like a noob question, just for newer players. When should you figure out what type of deck your deck is at card 15? I guess, you know, which card count? And is it advisable to change your deck strategy in the draft if you don't have any cards for your concept in the further draft?
I like any...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Edwacha, go.
Okay, so when it comes to drafting and trying to like fit something in an archetype, you want to look at the cards, not just how many cards go by, but how many cards are the rare ones that you don't expect to get of that type that's already in your deck, right? If you're trying to do aggro control and you start out with Shadow Strike, Eviscerate, you're good. Maybe switch over to mid-range if you don't get any more removals, by pick like 25 or something. But generally, you should feel good about pushing your deck in that direction if those three cards are in your first six cards. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if you get some 2-drops and 3-drops, that doesn't mean you go aggro control. That's not, you don't have the control part. That control part is the hard part. The aggro part is easy. There's plenty of 2-mana, 3-mana, 1-mana minions. Now, you may lean a little bit towards it if you already have your curve filled out, but, you know, don't go crazy with it. Same with, like, snowball cards, right? If you have some engines on the board that'll keep generating value, or if you have, like, buffs, those are the ones that are harder to get. So seeing more of those is what matters, not necessarily with number of cards. So I would go towards the archetype as early as pick number 3 if I have 2 cards that really fit something.
Hmm. Okay. Rasma, anything to add to that?
I think, like, within your run, you're going to be playing so many different roles. Like, some games you're going to be playing aggro, some games you're going to be playing control. And you got to know, like, how to kind of, like, shift your mentality towards playing whatever position you're put in. This goes into drafting as well. Like, you got to kind of leave a little bit of room where your deck can be very aggressive, but also can, you know, can slow down and win, like, a value game. And those are the best decks. Those are the strongest decks that have that flexibility to, you know, play in multiple different ways. Not just, you know, you have one game plan. One game plan is weak. You know, if that game plan fails, you lose. You know, you want, you know, a lot.
Okay. Krip, anything to add?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised it hasn't been brought up, but it's just based on the class. I think some class are more one-dimensional in terms of what you can do. Like Hunter is fairly restrictive.
Yeah.
If you want your hero power to do anything, you have to play a tempo or aggro deck. So, you know, taking a 9-mana minion on your first pick is not advisable. Whereas in some other classes, it could be if it's the best card, if it's the highest weighted card. There's some classes that honestly from pick 1, you're quite restricted. And sometimes you might just play a certain class a particular way. Like if I'm picking rogue, am I playing a control rogue? I don't know. Maybe I'm playing control rogue. I'll pick this card on turn 2. No, I'm playing the aggro rogue. Right. I'm playing aggressive or tempo rogue. So, I know that my deck at the end is going to have like 2 cards over 6 mana. And if I have more than that, it's not great. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you kind of have to know what you're doing to start, but it happens to different degrees. Like mage, you honestly just keep picking the best cards. The thing that is important to realize is your ability to skew from the norm gradually weighs as you draft. So if you're playing an aggro deck and you're on like pick 28 and you have Wisp versus like the new 8-mana 6/10 and like, I don't know, let's just say Boulder Fist Ogre, you will probably pick the Wisp. But if it's like pick number 10 and you still think you're playing an aggro deck, you'll probably pick the Boulder Fist, because you're not as like your confidence in what you're playing extends to where you are in the draft.
Okay, yeah, definitely great advice. Something you just kind of feel out to. These guys have obviously have like tens of thousands of games underneath their belts. So, you know, they've gotten a great feel for how it works. And it's just one of those things that everybody does. Gets a, you know, just kind of your own type of style and things. But yeah, that's going to be it for the show, guys. Great episode. I love having you guys on. We don't get a chance to do enough of these arena episodes. But, you know, whenever the expansions come out, always a great time to get, you know, just your take on everything. But why don't we do some shout-outs? Start with Ratsma. Kind of go around.
Shout out to my mom. Shout out to Abukta. Shout out to Krip. Shout out to Chaman V, Temple Storm. You can find me on twitch.tv/Ratsma. I think that's it.
He won't be sleeping though, guys. He won't be sleeping.
Oh yeah. I did have a sleep stream earlier. Right, first time ever.
Edwakta, you want to do a shout out?
So for a shout out to Blizzard, I love how much the game is balanced now for the Warrior in the arena.